Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.
Patrolling the mean streets of the global game, it's Football Weekly. And on today's rap sheet, goals and lots of them in the Premier League. At Wigan, Chelsea lose their perfect record. At Portsmouth, Pompey keep theirs. We ran up all the weekend's games and salute Liverpool. Written off like a cheque from their owners, they bounce back faster than a cheque from their owners. Elsewhere, as Europe gears up for another midweek of sub-handle soundtrack Champions League fun, Sid Lowe has all the latest from the Liga, including Cristiano Ronaldo throwing a huff. While in Serie A, it's played against Samp, with the league leaders no one was expecting. There's your post, what happened when Notts County won a game, and a foolish preview of all the midweek fun in today's Football Weekly. Hello, everybody, and hello to you lucky people watching there, because yes, listeners, we've got cameras pointing at us today. The stilted and rather awkward nature of the following podcast can be explained by the fact that three lenses are currently, we're under surveillance. It's like a kind of Big Brother pod or something, isn't it? Hideous. Anyway, if you've logged on to the video highlights of today's pod, you'll be aware, around the foreshortened table are Barry Glendenning.
Hello, James.
Hi, Barry.
How are you?
My, you look bigger in real life.
I do, yes. Let's say the camera adds, 8 or 9 pounds, so that's three cameras, £27.
It's a lot of pounds.
Hence this big extra chin here.
Indeed so. John Ashdown.
Hello.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
All right, excellent.
If this is a Big Brother-style podcast, yes, can we vote people out halfway through?
I think that's an excellent idea. We all have to nominate, don't we?
Yeah, we'll have to secret ballot.
All right, excellent stuff. And James Dart.
Hi, James. Yeah, I'm a little worried here because you guys have brought in loads of papers to make yourself look like you've done loads of research.
Right.
I feel quite, yeah,
naked.
Yeah.
But I think all the more impressive is he who can improvise something, you know, work a little bit of magic just out of nothing, you know.
Yeah.
Don't say the word naked, because that will be the next pod initiative.
All right, then. Well, we're gathered here to discuss, first off, the weekend's Premier League. And the big story, of course, was Wigan and their defeat of Chelsea. Now, this is the second time they've done this, because they started off the season with that extraordinary victory over Aston Villa. But in between, they were complete rubbish. I mean, the previous week, they got beaten 4-0 by Arsenal. So how did this happen, James Dart?
Well, as you say, it's their first Big Four victory in, 34 attempts or something? Chelsea just weren't very good, admittedly. I mean, they had that perfect storm in the second half after Drogba had equalised. And when Cech obviously brought down Hugo Rodallega for the penalty, immediately 10 men, immediately Hilario in goal, and immediately Wigan with the initiative, and they just pushed on and got the third on the counter in the final minutes. And all credit to them for Roberto Martinez getting that win. And as you mentioned, the Aston Villa game earlier in the year, I mean, beating Villa hasn't been such a big deal this season, I think, compared to last year. But I think that shocked a lot of people. And Rodallega is definitely coming a long, long way this season.
So how come they do it in this game and the Villa game? And in between, they were utter trite. Barry Glendenning.
The reason they did it in this game is because I dropped Rodallega from my fantasy football team on Friday.
Right.
And he promptly scored a goal and I think got an assist as well. So that's your answer to that question.
Right.
I'm still not convinced that beating Aston Villa on the opening day of the season is anything even close to being an extraordinary result. Aston Villa are not that good. I think John Terry summed it up best when he just said Chelsea's player, when he rounded on his teammates. I think he, you know, to be fair, he was including himself in it, saying that they weren't winning tackles, weren't winning headers, were typically reluctant to leave the field when one of their number got sent off, which seems to have been glossed over. Another, you know, Chelsea doing their bit for the respect campaign again. Because it was a pretty straightforward red card, and I'm not sure what the big problem was there.
All right, Barry, in being fair to John Terry, shocker. Excellent stuff. Are these warning signs for Chelsea, do you think, John Ashton, after six straight wins?
Well, we're not. We shouldn't go over the top about it, I suppose. We're going to.
It's just because the cameras are here.
I know.
We're toning
things down. Yeah. But you know, we're going to a decent side. They've got quite a combative midfield, and if you don't compete with them, as Terry sort of pointed out today, then you will struggle against them. So I don't think it's necessarily a big deal for Chelsea to things are going to start unraveling or anything. It does show though that Ancelotti still has a little work to do, I guess.
Of course, with the Cech being sent off, he will now be suspended automatically for one match, that one match being Liverpool's visit to Stamford Bridge. So this could be far from just a blip
in Chelsea's title challenge.
Could have hilarious consequences.
Excellent. All right, well, that's something we'll, of course, look at next Thursday when we look forward to, of course, you know, Chelsea. Liverpool. Speaking of Liverpool in the meantime, what a result for them at home to Hull. What a fantastic performance from Fernando Torres, James.
He's brilliant, yes. I mean, people have been claiming him to be a little bit of a flat-track bully at times with when he's been sort of taking... And when you take teams apart like Hull, it's fair enough. But and I mean, immediately Liverpool fans will always go back to Old Trafford last season and how he took Vidic apart in that game. I mean, he is a fantastic player. He has almost every element you need for the English game, I think. And I think we should give him all the credit in the world right now. And again, it will be fascinating to see how Chelsea try and combat him on Saturday.
Yeah, well, did you get an ovation even from the Hull fans when he came off?
I didn't see, I must say. Oh. But
I think the Hull fans have forgotten how to give ovations. It's so long since they've done one.
Right.
Yeah, I think, as you say, I mean, this was Hull and this was Phil Brown's Hull, who are not playing well at all at the moment.
And at the moment being what, since last December?
Since his half-time team talk at Eastlands, I believe, yeah.
Right, OK. Well, they've conceded 10 goals in two games with Liverpudlian sides, of course, including the Everton defeat. Phil Brown said he was disgusted in another conciliatory message to members of his dressing room. He said certain people in the dressing room are backing away from their responsibility. You'd have to be blind not to see it. So all seemingly rosy there within Hull FC.
He's also shaved off his sex beard.
Yes.
Which is an interesting development.
Is it?
Well, you thought it was this morning.
No, I did, you're right.
But now you're pretending. Now the cameras are here and the bright lights are shining in our eyes. You're pretending you don't know what I'm talking
but
about.
But intriguingly, you know, it is tonsorially, isn't it, when you... It is tonsorially. I'm getting confirmation there from Ben Green, who certainly would know.
Well, I can confirm that the ball patch on a monk's head is a tonsure.
Is it?
Yes.
Well, that's confusing. But anyway, I was talking about beards. Rafa's still got his. And having been so disparaging about his acumen and ability to lead a Liverpool challenge this year after the shaky start that Liverpool had to this campaign, they've roared back into the picture. I know this was just Hull, but they've looked fantastic about it, haven't they, Liverpool?
Yeah, they've looked very good. And the improvement's been in, I think they've now discovered a couple of different ways of playing. I saw them, I can't remember who it was against a couple of weeks ago, but it looked like Torres was almost playing like the England Emil Heskey role, where he was sort of being the main target in the centre and players around him were the ones who were actually the attacking threat in the box. And this week, obviously, the opposite has been true and he's been the main man. Still, I'm not convinced they can win the title. They're not keeping clean sheets. They're still conceding goals.
Mm.
So you won't be surprised if they lose, if they drop points. Perhaps where they
but this
shouldn't.
Is a campaign where you can drop points and still get away with it.
Possibly, yeah.
Level with Liverpool in the table, three behind the leaders, are, of course, Spurs, who had a whopping big result against Burnley, with that man Robbie Keane firing in four goals. He suddenly rediscovered his form after all that unfortunate business out on the left of midfield.
He stopped doing his sort of his somersaulting celebration, though.
Time passes for us all.
I think calling that a somersault is lending it gravitas. It doesn't deserve it. It's sort of a roly-poly, head-over-heels type thing.
Yeah, at least he was making a bit of an effort. Now he's just sort of spreading his arms in the sort of messiah pose.
He puts more effort into it than, say, Kevin Doyle, who just, like, rolls over onto his back, I think.
Hmm.
At Wolves.
Well, indeed, and, you know, we would say Torres was fantastic. How would you rate Robbie Keane's quartet? Poker, as the Italians call it.
Poker? Yeah. It's tough to judge in a way because Burnley were poor defensively, very, very poor.
Right.
And he won't score four goals much more easily than he did on Saturday. But it was clinical, and I think, yeah, we were talking earlier on, and I think as soon as Stephen Fletcher's goal was probably wrongly disallowed for Burnley, then it was all downhill, and downhill fast in the second half.
Right. The shadowy mastermind behind today's camera extravaganza, Matt Hall, points out that Burnley have apparently been losing each away game this season by one goal more each time. Who did they lose to previously?
Can't remember.
We were clearly listening to his points then when he made it.
He said basically every time they lose away, it's by one goal more. It's one goal bigger, basically. To Liverpool it was apparently. Incremental amounts. And next up is away for them is Blackburn. So there you go. Five,
it's a big one, that one up there.
Yeah. It is, John, is it?
It is. Well, it's the big derby game,
right?
Burnley-Blackburn. There was some interesting comments from David Dunn, who scored Blackburn's winner on Saturday against Villa, saying it was a great day for him because he'd scored the winner and because Burnley had shipped five, stoking things up ahead of next week.
Right. Is that next week or is the week after?
I assumed it was next week.
No, it's the next away game.
The next away game.
Yeah, it's in 2 weeks. So plenty of time for that fire to be quite literally stoked. In the meantime, elsewhere, you mentioned Villa's defeat against Blackburn. Sunderland, yet more misery at the stadium light for Mick McCarthy. A big win for them.
It was a good win for Sunderland.
It was.
Although not an entirely convincing one. They won 5-2, but a couple of their goals were dubious. Wolves were probably entitled to a penalty. Michael Turner had a... Why are you looking so bored? Michael Turner had a shocking game for Sunderland despite scoring a goal. He was very ropey in defence and was lucky not to concede a penalty. But I can see you're bored now, so I'll stop talking about that.
Only because I was eager to get on to Portsmouth.
All right.
Who have made it 7 now and show no signs of stopping. I mean, I know that they were unfortunate.
They do show signs of stopping. They were... I won't say vastly superior to Everton, but they were the better team and were...
They were the better team, were they?
Desperately unlucky not to get a point, at least.
Portsmouth was the better team against Everton?
I think so, yeah. They hit the woodwork, they had a couple cleared off the line. Right. And I mean, they were... Yeah, it was Yunus Kabul and David James strangely turning his back on the ball in the penalty area in that one moment when Saha scored. I mean, Everton did have chances, but Pompey were the better team. And whether or not that'll be taken into account for Paul Hart, I don't know.
Right. When you win despite playing badly, they say that's the mark of a championship side. When you lose despite playing well, what's that the mark of then?
Yes. Portsmouth. It's the mark of a team going down across the country.
Well, signs of life, as you say, Arunah Dindan and Jamie O'Hara, etc., etc. Also, sorry, James.
No, I was just going to say, it's staggeringly poor seasons for teams on the South Coast this year.
Huh?
We were saying you've got Portsmouth bottom of the Premier League, you've got Southampton. Bottom of the championship, League One. Plymouth, bottom of the championship.
And your team, James.
They're showing signs of definite relegation there.
Mm. But Portsmouth, there you go. One glimmer of hope for them is the fact they're going to be facing Wolves, Hull, Wigan, Blackburn and Stoke in their next, there's five of their next six league outings. So, you know, there is room there for them to pick up some points.
They're sort of, as I think somebody mentioned in The Observer on Sunday, they are almost having their pre-season now because of the amount of players they've had to bring in. And they're bound to... I mean, they are bound to improve to some extent because they are still gelling together.
Right.
I think Everton lost 7 out of their first 8 3-4 years ago and ended up in mid-table. So, you know, it's although it's a terrible, terrible start, obviously, it's not irretrievable yet.
Right. A message that counts for today's podcast as well. Indeed, as we head towards part two, in which we're going to be talking to Sid. That should lift things considerably there in Madrid. And also we'll be joined by Paolo Bandini with his all singing and dancing Serie A roundup. And look forward, of course, to such a Champions League delights as Fiorentina, Liverpool. All of that coming up right after this.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Sid, you're on the line.
I am. How are you?
I'm very well. Sorry to make you wait there, top Madrid-based Dr. Pal of the pod. Much to discuss, I imagine, as ever, from the Liga?
Yeah, loads. In fact, even more than most weeks.
Really? What kind of thing, Sid?
Well, how about you've got Barcelona spying on their own club directors?
What? Installing cameras in their place of work or something crazy like that, is it?
Putting together a security team to follow them around €56,000 worth of what Barcelona have described, or brought to the point what their director general has described as a security audit, not at all a piece of industrial espionage. But it just so happens that the four people who are being spied upon are four vice presidents who could be in to take over on a continuity ticket when Laporta is forced to step down next summer. And suspiciously, the one vice president who has said he's not going to stand for next summer is the one that wasn't. So it's all very, very dirty. The good thing, of course, for Barcelona is that their football team's rather good.
Oh, well, absolutely. And Ibrahimovic scoring again. How many games is that now in a row?
That's 5 in a row. He started the game on the bench. Thierry Henry then went off with a little bit of an injury. Barcelona weren't playing very well. And all of a sudden, bang, they started playing well with Ibrahimovic on the pitch. He scored a very nice goal, connected very, very well with Leo Messi again. The assist was from Messi, the goal from Ibrahimovic. And Barcelona handled what was a very difficult game very well indeed, because they were up against a Malaga side who basically tried to kick the absolute crap out of them throughout the game. And they've got a guy at the back, Malaga, called Wellington. No N in it, so it's Wellington rather than Wellington. He punched Piqué in the head, stamped on Leo Messi's ankle, and didn't get sent off. The one who did was poor old Luque, the former Newcastle striker, in the game where obviously the referee got to the point where he thought, right, next person to foul going off. And it happened to be pretty much the most innocent man on the pitch.
Right, so Wellington put the boot in, Sid. Surely.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Well, now,
I think Sid considered that pun beneath him. I'd say he thought of it, dismissed it, rejected it.
That might be why I made a point of pointing out that there was no N in Wellington.
All right.
Jimbo couldn't help
himself. Barcelona have a beef with Wellington? That's my...
dear, oh
dear. Cristiano Ronaldo... the other big name signing, of course, there over at one of the many big name signings at Real Madrid, throwing a strop. Sid, tell us more.
Yeah, he didn't throw a strop in the sense that he hasn't shouted or moaned or anything like that, but he was taken off by Manuel Pellegrini. Played pretty well again, Cristiano Ronaldo. Almost scored a brilliant goal where he ran from inside his own half, went all the way through, and the goalie eventually made the save. Although I would argue that he didn't actually go round anyone, he just ran straight through them. And he was taken off by Manuel Pellegrini. Pellegrini kind of put out his hand rather timidly. Cristiano Ronaldo ignored it, sat on the bench looking kind of angry, taking off his boots in a slightly theatrical sort of way. In fact, in exactly the theatrical sort of way that we've seen 100 times with Alex Ferguson. So in that sense, I suppose, it shouldn't be a big deal. But what this is doing is it's creating a bit of a backlash against Pellegrini, in that Pellegrini's been talking a lot about rotations and he's been leaving a big name player out every single game. Now people are saying, well, you can't leave Cristiano Ronaldo out because he's ace. And just as importantly, you can't leave out Kaká, because Kaká came on at half-time at the weekend and completely, in Pellegrini's own words, changed the face of the side. Real Madrid were absolutely awful, I thought, in the first half. Tenerife, newly promoted side, had more possession, more shots, more chances, more of the ball than Real Madrid, and still lost 3-0.
So if Kaká were to, Lord forbid, be injured or in some way unavailable at some point this season, it would spell a big problem right now for Real Madrid.
Well, it certainly looks that way at this time, in so much as, you know, you look at the players they've got and the creativity and the vision isn't really there without Kaká, although to some extent Guti's doing that. He's playing at the moment and he's playing very well. I personally think that in the long run that won't be a big deal. I think Real Madrid have more than enough resources in the side, even without Kaká, that they can get it right and can do it without him. I'm tempted, it's perhaps a little harsh and a little bit opportunistic to say this, but I'm tempted to say that Real Madrid's big problem continues to be Raúl, because he's a player who plays just off the striker, and yet there's three or four much, much better candidates for that, and it would also be the natural place to put Kaká into the side.
Well, we were just talking about the fact that teams on the south coast of countries often struggle. Jerez would seem to be some kind of testimony of that, although they did get a point, did they?
Fantastic. They got their first ever point in the top flight with a draw against Espanyol, which is a great result until you realise one thing, they still haven't scored. Five games, still no goals. Well, they did hit the crossbar. So there's two games running. I think they've hit the bar now, Jerez.
All right.
So,
who would win if they played Portsmouth, Sid? Who would win?
I have to say, I think probably Portsmouth, but I really wouldn't want to be betting a huge amount on either side. I think Portsmouth would. Well, this is a ridiculous thing to say, considering how bad they are at the moment. I think they would show a little bit more spirit, be a little bit more competitive physically as well. And actually, having seen them at the weekend, I don't think Portsmouth were that bad this weekend.
No, well, I was just going to say, they're not actually, experts say, that bad a team. Portsmouth, just the result's not going their way. Terrific stuff, Sid. We look forward to speaking to you on Thursday, if we may, to review what looks set to be an exciting round of Champions League matches. Sid Lowe in Spain. Well, joining us now, to continue our continental coverage, Paolo Bandini. How nice to see you, Paolo.
Have you given me a seat and everything because the TV cameras are here?
The camera's in. It's like the visit from The Social, you have
absolutely
to make nice. Yes, now, top of the table, all on their own. At last we have a lone occupant of first place, and it is, Paolo.
Not who everyone thought it was going to be. It's Sampdoria, who had a... Well, an impressive 1-0 win over Inter. I wouldn't say it was the best performance you ever see, but you know, they got the job done, and a really impressive start to the season now.
First time since 1991, their Scudetto winning year, the days of Vialli and Mancini.
Indeed. They've already outdone that side by winning their first four games of the season. And sort of, it's an interesting, because they were coming up to this week, and there was a little piece in one of the Florentine newspapers. It was about how they always go to the same restaurant for dinner, and the owner before last weekend's game, the owner had said, I bet you a free dinner that you can't get 7 points from the next three games. And the squad had a little huddle and they said, no, give us four games, because they knew they had Fiorentina away and Inter coming up. And everyone thought, okay, well, maybe they get 1 point from Fiorentina and Inter. And they went and they lost to Fiorentina midweek. And everyone thought, okay, well, the wheels have come off. They've, you know, they've had their little run. And now they've come back and beaten Inter. And it's, you know, it's a really genuinely very impressive result for them.
So do they get the free dinner then?
They have to get 1 point now from their next game, which is against Parma at home. So you'd like to think they're in with a good shout.
All right. Well, Ars Technica posting in, bigging up Samp's performance on Saturday. Castellazzi, the goalkeeper, brilliant. The Italian press going crazy about this young fellow, Andrea Poli, the 20-year-old. Midfielder.
Yeah, he actually almost wasn't even here for the start of the season because Italy's under-20s are currently involved in the under-20 World Cup, which seems a particularly pointless World Cup, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many under-levels there need to be. But he turned down a call-up because he thought he was going to get running the team, and he hasn't. He's been really good. He's industrious.
Is he now? But the majority of the Italian press, though, seem to lay the blame for this squarely. Rather than discussing, say, Samp's merits, it was all about Mourinho. You balls it up. You finally had the team playing well, but then you had to go and change it. You idiot.
Yeah, he gave up his diamond midfield and played a 4-3-3, and so he's inevitably been blamed. I mean, actually, it's kind of a tough rub in that Wesley Schneider's injured and Motta's injured and Montari's injured. So he only had one guy we could have played in the hole anyway, which is Stankovic. And Stankovic hasn't been that great, and his Mourinho's also arguing, well, we're going to Kazan now in midweek. I think they're playing on Tuesday. And he thought, well, I don't want to risk the one player I've got who can play in that position. He obviously thought he could win with 4-3-3, but the 4-3-3 looked much like it did in the last couple of seasons, which is you've got a bank of three midfielders, a bank of three attackers, and nothing connecting them.
Mm.
Although, actually, really, if you want to blame one person, it's probably Davide Santon, who'd restored to the team. Very good young left-back who made the one, you know, big mistake, giving away possession on the edge of his area that led to the goal. Because other than that, Sampdoria, I think, had a total of four shots in the whole match.
You mentioned Mourinho. Has he been like particularly chippy in the wake of this defeat, or has he taken it with his customary good grace?
Customary good grace. So actually, it was interesting. They've drawn the comparison this morning in Gazzetta, because the last year when they drew in the first game of the season with Sampdoria, it was Mourinho's first game in charge, and he was he was very polite and sort of spoke at length about the problems with his team, what needed to get better, and what Sampdoria done well. This time he came out and said, I'm only speaking to you, because he actually not spoke to Priest at all since he was sent off against Cagliari a week ago. I'm only speaking to you because the club's asked me to. And then when they asked him whether Del Neri, who was in charge of an Atlanta side that beat him 3-1, was
that famous tip
noir
I gave you last year,
when they asked if he was his bet noir, he said, how can he be my, well, actually I think he said, yes, he is my bet noir, in a sarcastic way, and then said he came to Porto after I left, having won the Champions League, and he lasted 15 days.
How can he be my bet noir?
Sorry, pal, you said he was saving somebody for a Champions League match on Tuesday or Wednesday. Surely a Serie A match is more important than a early stages of Champions League qualification.
I think we all know that for all that Inter have tried to make noises about, oh yes, the league's just important to us, the Champions League, that there is one trophy that matters for President Massimo Moratti at the moment, and that is the Champions League. So I can understand it from that point of view.
Under Mourinho in the Champions League, they have 1-2, drawn 4 and lost 3. And all the noises today about the fact that Moratti said, look here, Mourinho, old fella, sorted out in Europe. Other Champions League fixtures, you've got Juventus, I bet Alessandro Del Piero possibly back in action. They are taking on Bayern Munich, who got beaten by Hamburg at the weekend. They're now 6 points off the top of the Bundesliga. Milan are at home to Zurich, which even they might just about possibly get a result from, although my money would be on a draw after watching them last night against Bari.
Six league games so far, Milan have scored 3 goals, which is third worst in the division.
One in the last 5.
Yeah, well, because they scored 2 in the opening against Siena. Pretty underwhelming all round from the teams that play in Champions League, because Juventus were average at best in, well, not even that, they probably were lucky to get over the 1-0 draw at home to Bologna. Milan, awful at home, 0-0 draw with Bari, and Fiorentina just scraped a 1-0 win at Livorno.
Milan, for example, I'd say that after the 0-0 they had with Livorno the other day, how long, weeks, do you think for Leonardo before he loses his job?
It's hard to say, isn't it?
The players don't look like they've got any particular respect for him or what he's got to say.
No, and the team's really not going anywhere. And the question really, as always with these things, is how hands-on Silvio Berlusconi's feeling about it. I mean, you know, he has... I mean, I suppose it's hard to tell because it was Ancelotti for so long. You know, he can be reasonably patient in a way that he's not expected to with these things at Berlusconi if he likes.
But Ancelotti brought him a title to start off with.
Yeah, it's difficult. I don't think Leonardo's having any impact on the squad, and I certainly think it would be probably the right thing to start thinking about. But whether or not they will, again, I don't know if Galliani is proactive enough to do it if Berlusconi doesn't get himself involved.
Who would be a likely replacement?
interesting one, and I guess, you know, all the sort of names you'd expect to be bandied around any time one of the top jobs in Europe would come up, but I imagine there's a good chance he'd try and pick up someone who's worked closely with the club before, because that's what that tends to be the way he likes to work. I'm not sure.
He's got Tassotti standing
yeah,
by.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Tassotti might be the man who he'd turn to just at this particular...
Mm. Well, in the meantime, you also mention Fiorentina and their big game against this freewheeling Liverpool side who are just taking apart Hull. Can Florence's finest possibly stop the likes of Torres and Co?
Very interesting Fiorentina season, because they've been pretty bad in most of their games. If you sort of watch them and think, oh, they're not playing well, they don't look fluid, but you know, they've got 13 points and they're doing fine. Prandelli's admitted he's anxious about this game. You know, they haven't been great in Europe. I'd be surprised if they can get a result against Liverpool.
Tactically, are they strong enough defensively to take care of... They've got problems going forward because Mutu's got his brain elsewhere with a £15 million fine round his head. Gilardino suspended.
Yeah, well, I think the problems are further back than that, in that I don't think they've ever found any sort of adequate replacement for Melo in the middle of the park, who is sort of characterised as this ball, as this, you know, someone who breaks up play, but actually was very good at carrying it forward as well. And I think they've lost that in midfield. They haven't adequately placed. They also have been needing to upgrade at the fullback positions for a while. I know they've brought in De Silvestri, but it just doesn't look that good there, and that's why they're not getting supplied to the forward. I mean, Gilardino's still having a decent season. Jovetic is stepped in and is doing a pretty decent job in Mutu's position. It's just a question of throughout the team, you look at their quality and you compare them to the other teams in the Champions League and you just think, well, it's not quite on the same level, is it?
A prediction for the result, Fiorentina-Liverpool, Paolo?
I think Liverpool are going to win possibly 2-0.
Okay, interesting. Thank you very much for joining us then, Mr. Bandini. More top Italian considerations on the crazy world of Serie A in Paolo's Monday Italian blog, including the goings-on behind the scenes at Fiorentina and probably a bit on the chaos down south in Naples. That, though, is it for part two. Part three is standing by, containing some very exciting posts indeed. A bit of talk about Ipswich, Notts County again, and a look forward to some more Champions League midweek fixtures. Crikey. Right. Well, we mentioned the Big Brother voting. Let's have a look at how things are going so far then, eh? John, who are you nominating?
I'd like to nominate Baz just because I think it would wind him up.
You're a brave man. Baz, who are you nominating?
Well, I'm going to nominate you because I think you miss your family.
I
it's
do.
Not because I don't like you and I can't stand side of you.
We saw you in the diary room earlier crying.
Yeah. And I once lived with you. I once lived in our... We had our own little Big Brother
we did,
apartment
didn't we?
In Vienna.
Yeah, and, fantastic. Why was that never filmed?
Well, it's a good job it wasn't.
Well, indeed.
Those broken windows.
If you're listening, owner of flat in Vienna,
with the
can't
disturbing.
Say sorry enough. Yeah.
And yes, your floor did get covered in water.
Yeah.
Despite our lies.
Yes. James Dart.
I feel like I've got a lot of power now because you've both got like a vote each. So yep. I might sit on the fence until later in the pod.
All right, nice idea.
Keep that huge amount of
I suspect this conceit might have gone on long enough. Let's just get on with the rest of the pod. Now, how about this? We were talking about Newcastle's game at Ipswich. Blow me if they didn't go and win 4-0 there. Roy Keane's misery continues.
Awful. They're playing Roy Keane having a shocking time at Ipswich, second bottom only to Plymouth.
Yes.
4 points, no wins, is that
despite
right?
Despite being nowhere near the south coast. Now, I asked you whether this would mean that he would get fired at some point, and you said, no, they won't fire him. Why is that? He's too scary or what?
I think they've made a bit of a commitment to him.
Oh,
they'll give him enough. He only joined sort of right at the dog end of last season. So I think it's more a case of if he walks away rather than him being fired at the moment. But he's one of these managers who, some managers join clubs and you think to yourself, oh, at least this chap will get them organised, he'll get them sorted out at the back or whatever. With Keane, it seems to either work really well, his sort of force of personality, like it did in the early days at Sunderland, or it simply doesn't work, like it did in the later days at Sunderland, and currently now with Ipswich.
Right, nine games in, still without a win.
It's the reason it worked well at Sunderland was he took over a team that had come down and he was given absolutely shed loads of cash. And he bought his way out of the division. I mean, that's pretty much what he did. And he has been given an awful lot of money again, but he's bought pretty badly, I would say. I mean, but
bought the same player as he bought when he got Sunderland.
But, and Tamás Priskin, I think, isn't it?
He's brought in a lot of average players, I think.
He's been given a lot of money for the Championship, I think, and he's just doing a shocking job. But I just think he's just ruling. I mean, according to Dwight York in a leading Sunday tabloid this this weekend. He was ruling the Sunderland dressing room.
Is this the Jordan story or no?
No. This is when his time at Sunderland, apparently. York claimed that he's just ruled it by ranting and no more, and that he told his players he couldn't trust them after one defeat, that he apparently slapped Dean Whitehead, apparently, according to this thing. But I mean, he's a reasonable chap, Roy. Apparently, Dwight York texted him to commiserate him upon when he left Sunderland, and a three-word reply, with the middle word being F, to go F himself.
No.
Polite.
Nobody needs that. No. It's not nice, is it? Although a difficult moment for him, of course. Sol Campbell.
Sorry, can I just say Sunderland or Newcastle won that game.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of a bit bewildered if they'd shown a tenth of the fight towards the tail end of last season that they're showing this season, they wouldn't have got relegated in the first place.
Now, I mentioned that Sol Campbell, Notts County, they went and won a game now that Sol's left. Shot revelations from Sol about the calibre of players he expected to be sharing the Notts County dressing room with. And all sorts of unanswered questions about where the money actually is coming from, if it is coming from anywhere for Notts County. It's not been the best of times, but they went and won a game, and then what happened?
They beat Port Vale, didn't they, on the weekend?
3-1, was it?
Yeah, I think that's right. What do you mean when you say then what happened? Did something happen?
Well, yes, as Wango Kid posts in... up the story, James. No, you go ahead.
I'm just... don't know what I'm doing, really.
James is breakdancing. We have to be...
Okay. It's like a swan.
Unfortunately, we have to be very careful what we say about Notts County, because downstairs in the office, there's a sheaf of legal documents about that high... things you're not allowed to say and say and stuff. So they're very murky finances. But
well, let's be rude about Port Vale instead. With Mick Adams?
Oh, Mick Adams put his entire squad up for sale in the wake of that defeat.
He put his entire squad up for sale in... and it's not quite the transfer window
on
yet.
eBay or what?
I don't know. I don't know how much he's going to get for the Port Vale squad, but it's... Yeah, I mean, this is Mickey Adams, quite a shambolic manager, I would say, through his career. He's got a 37... He's won 181 games out of 486. Always turns up at another club, somehow always gets a job. Really poor manager, I think. Now he's going to put the entire squad up for sale. I mean, some can go out on loan, because we haven't gone past that emergency loan deadline. But some players have just come back from injury.
Right.
So they haven't had a chance to even impress in the season, and they're up
but
for sale.
But this is a rhetorical device that you say, you're all up for sale, or he genuinely wants to get rid of the entire squad.
It's a bit of both, isn't it?
Right.
Apparently, I was checking out, Port Vale manager John McGrath did exactly the same thing in the 1979-1980 season, and they stayed up. I would expect Port Vale would still stay up this season. I think they're probably good enough to stay up in League Two, but I think Mickey Adams should be looking at himself as well as just his players.
Right. With regard to Sol Campbell walking out on Notts County, does anyone have any sympathy for him in the fact that he was had certain promises made? And
well, he said
I was promised Jeff Stelling, Eamon Dunphy, and Johnny Giles. Look what I get! But I'm still here.
You're still here, Barry.
I'm still here for the long haul.
Right, that's great news. He specifically mentioned Benjani and Roberto Carlos as future teammates in the plan that was outlined to him when he signed on.
But I mean, some of the quotes went on the day he officially signed at Meadow Lane. He said, "I had a real gut feeling about this. I've seen the background. I've seen the infrastructure. This is going to be great." And I mean, I've got no sympathy for him whatsoever. But as this always happens, he'll show up at another club and be every chance.
Will he?
I think he'll show up at another club, and I wouldn't rule it out being an emergency Premier League club in January potentially at some stage. I still have no sympathy for him.
I don't have any sympathy with him, but at the same time, I don't necessarily think he's done a terrible thing by walking out. I mean, he could have sat there for 6 months and just picked up his wage and his big wages and then wandered off in January or whatever. At least he's actually made a decision to bail immediately rather than...
So we're saying this is actually a good thing. He's done this out of the goodness of his heart.
No, I'm not saying it's necessarily a good thing, but I don't know if it's something that he needs to be sort of vilified for.
All right, then. Okay. Well, let's move on then to some posts, shall we? Errol Opal, posting on Facebook, talking about our recent talk about inappropriate or absurd kit sponsors. I must mention one from the 88-89 season, where Turkish side Alte had their kit sponsored by, and this is irony, Samantha Fox. And he actually posts a little link, www.maxiddaa.com/files/SamanthaFoxJPG. There they are. They've got Samantha Fox just written on the front of their jerseys.
Pictures.
How random is that? No picture.
I know she's only about 4 foot 11, but
right.
Is she sort of big in Turkey otherwise and not that way either? But
no.
But why was she?
She was having a concert there, so she was promoting it on the shirts of on the kit of this side, Alte.
Didn't the Super Furry Animals sponsor Cardiff City for a while?
They might have done.
Well, yeah. They did name one of their songs, albums, The Man Don't Give a F after Robin Friday.
One team, I was looking at this last week and yeah. I didn't get a chance to say, there was it wasn't a sponsor, but there's a team in, I think, Peru called Deportivo Wanka, which they have to have on the front of their shirt, which I quite enjoyed.
And now everyone's going to see me laughing at that. Ending in an A.
So now everyone's going to see me laughing at that.
It's funny. You've laughed at worse.
Yeah, indeed. You were posing him, Barry, after somebody took exception to your revelation that you visited a bull ring in Seville.
Well, they leapt to the conclusion that I had attended a bull fight, which I didn't, but I would have attended one if there had been one on.
You posted about it and you said that you can certainly appreciate why people might go all guardian in the face of such an unfair contest. But I'm told, said Barry in his post, that the bulls get to lord it up in the lap of luxury for the 4 years they're on death row. And hey, Habib, a swiftly posted back saying, a bit like England qualifying for a World Cup there, which I thought
very
was
good.
Rather pithy.
If you hadn't told me that earlier, I'd have...
Yeah, well, he did laugh a lot, Hey Habib,
yeah.
when...
Yeah, I did.
Hey Habib also posting, a busy chap this week, is El Hadji Diouf the most despicable footballer on the planet after his suggestion that people had thrown bananas at him when they really actually didn't? Alpe d'Huez, can Jimbo please comment on David Harmon's rage at the end of the Eurosport cycling coverage when the Zen-like commentator lost his rag? I certainly can. This, for those of you who missed it, was the end of the World Road Race Cycling Championships only yesterday. 262.2 kilometres it was, and won, bizarrely enough, by Cadel Evans. But before that, just after David Harmon had suggested that, I think it was Evans who was out on this kind of final dash to the line, would have to breathe through every available orifice, then Eurosport International's coverage apparently went to a break, but we didn't on British Eurosport, and thus were treated to David Harmon reacting to being sent to a break without any kind of count from the producer by going, "What, JC? No count? That's bollocks!" And there you go. Right. Champions League. There's a big one, Man United, Wolfsburg. Before that, let's just a quick nod to Arsenal. They had a 1-0 at Fulham. I mentioned there's six off the top now with a game in hand. A lot of love there for young Vito Mannoni.
It is Mannoni, not Mannone, as the Match of the Day commentator repeatedly...
Did they?
It is Mannoni.
I watched Match of the Day with a sound down this week in a brave experiment.
You probably won't make the right decision.
I think you're on thin ice now if you're going to start criticising other broadcasters for getting people's names wrong in this podcast.
That's true.
Barry's taken his well-balanced pill today, but... all right, well, anyway, they're taking on Olympiacos, who after a shaky start to the season, as I'm sure we're all aware, have suddenly found form under their new manager, a certain Mr. Zico. And they've had two wins in the last 4 days. They've just beaten local rivals Panathinaikos. And with them, of course, they have young Matt Derbyshire and Olaf Melberg.
And Olaf Melberg, interesting stat about his return to Arsenal... He was the first player to score a competitive goal at the Emirates.
Is that so?
That is so.
Now,
so they've him and they've Derbyshire and lots of players with names ending
Kos and Os.
Adopoulos and Idris.
Right. It's more well balanced.
And that's one minute by minute report I really hope I'm not doing.
Yeah, who will be deciding that?
We haven't drawn the straws yet.
All right then, okay. I bet you're all looking forward to Apoel Nicosia against Chelsea. They're not the proverbial bad apple, because they in their first game they drew away at Atletico Madrid. So you know,
but they suffered their worst domestic start to a league season in 38 years.
Really,
they're 10th in the out of 14 teams in the Cypriot top flight at the moment. Although they have won 20 out of 24 home games in their last 24. But yeah, pretty miserable in the league. It's only been 3 games old, admittedly.
So not much chance of an apple turnover then against Chelsea.
Apple crumble.
Right. Okay.
I didn't really need to do that research. You just wanted to mention Apoel Nicosia just for that outstandingly...
The shame of it. The shame. Yeah.
The core of the side's quite strong, I think.
I bet Chelsea pipped them at the post. That's quite poor, actually, isn't it?
I've got nothing.
I wonder, do you reckon a striker might peel off the back of it?
Oh, I bet this apple cider will prove tough to... Et cetera, et cetera. All right, John, tell us about Man United Wolfsburg. Go on then.
Well, I've printed before the podcast, I printed out what the UEFA had to say about it and haven't had a chance to read, so I could just read bits and bobs out.
All right, let me tell you that Wolfsburg, of course, are the surprise German champions last year, and up front they've got two of Europe's deadliest strikers. And in Dzeko, of course, the Bosnian, who's performed such wonders in their qualifying. What's that, though?
I could tell you, but...
not on camera.
Nah.
No, okay. Dzeko. And this fellow, Graffiti, you know, the one we make all the jokes about with the... Yeah, but brilliant. He scored, I think, three, didn't he, in their win over...
Graffiti regularly leaves his mark.
He left his mark. The writing's on the wall. Da, 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 da.
I'm still trying to think of Apple ones. If I do think of one between now and the end of the podcast, can we edit it in to make me look as witty as everyone else?
And edit that bit out, presumably. Yeah. But the other thing, the other side of this team is the fact that they've got the joint worst defence, John, in the Bundesliga.
They've made a bad start, haven't they, in the German domestically. I don't think they've been... Well, they're the reigning champions, obviously, but I don't think they've had a rip-roaring start.
No.
It is one of the most appetising of all the... group games, isn't it? I mean, there is quite a flat group stage this year in the Champions League, but it is the sort of one of the potential ties that could actually be entertaining, and you could see Man United pushed. That said, I still think United will probably do enough.
Well, the Premier League teams flew through the first game, so four wins. Same again this time around, you think?
I think there's a lot of naive teams in Europe. Apple are a bit green. Sorry, yes. I would expect Manchester United to beat Wolfsburg at home.
Excellent stuff. All right.
I think Wolfsburg will get a result. I think they're one of the... I think Grafitsch and...
Is it Grafitsch? You're right. It should be you're right. Yeah.
I think they're... I'm not like some like pronunciation police today.
No, but you can't make the joke about writing on the wall if you say Grafitsch.
I know. That's
no
good. Let's just keep them as Grafitsch, then.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're arguably the best strike partnership in Europe.
Ooh.
And with Simovic as well, they're a damn good team. And it'll be a real good test for United, I think, this week.
Brilliant. Well, there you go. And many, many thanks to you all for joining us on this special... audio and video pod. Barry,
what did you make of it, by the way? Because you said beforehand it was like this going to be like the scene at the end of The Wizard of Oz,
where the curtain falls away and the little man's there, yeah, pulling the levers.
Well, we've got the little man anyway.
Good. Well, that brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly. Barry, many, many thanks for your participation.
You're welcome.
And apple-based humour.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Although I thought you scraped.
Will I turn? oh, you're a bad apple.
John.
Cheers.
And you too. And Mr. James Dart.
Right.
Lovely. Okay. Bye, viewers and listeners. We'll see you next time.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.